And welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, I'm Dr. Roy Morgan. It's good to be with you today. It looks like it's going to be beautiful outside. After sharing with you the studies that I have in front of me, you're probably going to say, well, that's free. I think I can do those things. So much of what we do, you know, living on the earth, it costs money. Well, not everything costs a lot of money. Some things are relatively inexpensive, but the payoff is huge. One concept. It's actually pretty rare that you could just do one simple thing, like take a supplement, and it would completely rejuvenate your body. It would make the diabetes completely disappear. You would never have any more arthritis. Your cancer would disappear. That just doesn't happen. You have to think in terms of, it's usually a lot of little good, really good, healthy habits that lead to a greater result. And so when I came across this article, it kind of caught my attention. It's about sunshine. I know this is just going to be so simple, but sometimes you have to hear something. And if you hear something, you go, I'm going to consider that. And then you start to think about, well, how can I put that into action? Am I guilty of this, or am I already doing the right thing? Well, just consider these things, and let's see what we can come up with right here. I know for a fact that if you listen to the average dermatologist, they're probably going to tell you that going out in the sunshine is just about as dangerous as smoking 40 packs of cigarettes a day. I made that number up. I might as well just say smoking. And of course, the more cigarette smoke that you get in your lungs, the higher your risk of lung cancer. It's been proven. If you don't believe that, just look it up. Type into the computer, ask the question, is smoking cigarettes bad for the lungs? Does it lead to lung cancer? You'll come up with some answers, all right, and you'll find out that it may not be the best thing to do. But what I'm concerned about is, what if you type in the same thing I said about sunlight? Is sunlight bad for you? And depending on who does the web search or gives you the answers, you may come up with several hits. I should have done that this morning. I didn't do it, though, but it's easy to do. But who knows? You might get people going, oh, my goodness, you should never be out in the sunshine. Don't you know that causes skin cancer? Well, if you believe the idea that the more that the sunlight hits your skin, the higher your risk of skin cancer, well, you might want to think again. According to a study, it took place in Sweden. It was published in the year 2016 in the Journal of Medicine, so that's a highly prestigious peer-reviewed medical journal. All right. We want to ask the question, is this narrative of sunlight equating to skin cancer, is that actually accurate? Well, in the study, it showed that sunlight protects against cancer in general. And specifically, it protects against skin cancer. That's probably going to be a hard one to buy into, but just listen up right here. Here's the study. The researchers who were affiliated with the Karolinska Institute, they followed a group of nearly 30,000 Swedish women. You don't even know how glad I am, but they didn't put men in this study. We're going to use women as our example. Perfect. 30,000 Swedish women from the year 1990 all the way up to 2011. So we could just round it off and say that was 20 years. And this happened in what's called the Melanoma in Southern Sweden study. So you know what a melanoma is? That's not an easy form of cancer. That's very significant. We have to pay attention to that. So when the study began, the women were somewhere between 20 years of age all the way up to 64, and they followed them for about 21 years. They answered questions about how often they exposed themselves to sunlight, and for example, whether they said yes, they liked sunbathing, or they liked to go swimming outside. And as a general rule, when you swim, you're wearing a swimsuit, which means you probably have more of your skin or flesh exposed to the sunlight. you know, those invisible wavelengths of ultraviolet radiation that you can feel on your skin. I mean, am I the only one that when you go outside, it just feels good to have light on your skin? I contend that your body is one amazing solar-powered battery charger, and we need to charge your batteries. Okay, the researchers also asked the women whether or not they ever used a tanning bed. So I'm going to state that I believe that sunlight that God has created for us, you know, in the beginning, God created the greater light to rule by day, that's the sun. But the tanning bed, no, that's man's creation. I'm going to call a tanning bed artificial ultraviolet light, or synthetic. How about I use the word synthetic? Okay, the women that avoided natural sunlight, and they also avoided, you know, tanning beds, they were the ones in the study that were by far and away most likely to die. And of course, I have the graph right in front of me. They look at non-smokers versus smokers, and they looked at women that totally avoided sun exposure and women that had moderate sun exposure. And those, they use these little triangles or pyramids, those are the women on the graph that have the most active sun exposure. And of course, you can't see the graph I'm looking at, but I've taken my highlighter and my marker and scribbled notes all over it because it's just so interesting. The punchline is this: if you're a non-smoker and you have what I'm going to call good optimal sunlight, not too much. You have to understand, folks, I'm not saying go lay on the beach for 14 hours and where you have fluid-filled blisters and you can't work for 6 months because you've done such burning damage to your skin. No, that's not what I'm talking about. So it shows that the women, most precisely, that received the greatest amount of ultraviolet light, they absolutely had the lowest chance of dying. And of course, in that study, they did include women that checked the box and said they used a tanning bed. You know, they go to a tanning salon. And so you would think, well, this is not going to really help smokers because we know that smokers are going to cause cancer. Well, listen to this right here. The risk of death in smoking women who received a lot of ultraviolet light was just as great as the non-smoking women who avoided the sunlight. I don't know if you understand what that's saying. Let me say it a different way. Women that smoke and they get out in the sun, meaning they don't avoid the sunlight, I totally botched that, I'm sorry. But the point is, even if you do not smoke, if you avoid the sunlight, you've got a great risk of dying. Among both smokers and non-smokers, the women with the greatest exposure to ultraviolet light, they absolutely had the lowest risk of cancer. So that's true both for women that smoke cigarettes and women that don't smoke. Now, this study was done, I think, in 2011. Folks, this was before vaping was a big deal. I fully expect there's going to be studies that show that women that vape a lot, they're going to have a multiplicity of diseases and conditions, and they're not going to live as long as those that don't vape. But that hasn't come out yet to my knowledge, or maybe I should just look for those studies more. Okay. This is for all forms of cancer, every form of cancer that you can think of. So being exposed to the sunlight is extremely protective against a woman having cancer. Okay. Now, this is the part that I thought was interesting right here. Oh, one more point. It did say in the study that sunlight, it also reduced the risk of death from cardiovascular disease. So, if you said, hey, Dr. Morgan, what's the number one cause of death in America or North America? I'll include our Canadian friends and Hispanic friends in Mexico. So, if you live in North America, it's heart disease. That's the number one cause of death. Well, lo and behold, if you get out in the sun, guess what happens? You reduce your risk of dying. Okay, you can't make this stuff up. Now, I know this is just what the researchers were saying about this. They wanted to find out if there's some specific mechanism that they could deduce from their study as why as a woman sunbathing might reduce the risk of death in their study. And they said, well, maybe vitamin D may play a role, but that may not be the full story, okay? This is the one that I thought was interesting right here. A possible additional explanation is, and this is awesome, is that ultraviolet light causes skin cells to produce endorphins. And what that does is that gets rid of stress. It attenuates stress stimuli, according to the study. Do you know what endorphins are? Let me say it a different way. If your body is not producing the endorphins that it needs to keep you in great working order, guess what you're going to feel like? You're going to feel horrible all the time. You'll feel absolutely miserable. You will be at your lowest point emotionally. You'll probably be physically exhausted. You'll feel like your body is just not working right. Well, that's endorphins. Well, guess how you get your body to produce endorphins? Well, there's a lot of ways, but the way I'm talking about right now specifically is just taking your body out of the house, tell your body to obey you, say, get up, walk out the front door, and stand outside. The other day, I got to watching, I started watching a cardinal. And the cardinal was going after a sunflower. And it wasn't a sunflower like, you know, these big commercial crops of the giant sunflowers. It was just like a, it's probably like a black-eyed Susan, something like that. But he was picking at it. And it wasn't the yellow, you know, petals. It was actually the seed that was in the middle of it. So I thought, wow, isn't that interesting? God's given the bird, you know, some breakfast chow. But it was just so interesting watching it. You're going to get better if you go outside. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Now, this is another one right here. And please, you're welcome to question me. If you don't agree with these things, that's fine. I like hearing both sides of the story. Because the bottom line is, what we're doing is we're asking questions so we can say, okay, what do we do to get better? How do we maintain our body? How do we keep ourselves in great working order? Folks, I'll be the first one to tell you, and you already know this to be true, it is too hard to rejuvenate the body once you've passed the point of no return. If you've lost all your strength and you have full-blown diabetes and you've got advanced cancer and you can't function, that makes it a big hurdle that you got to get over. So whatever you do to take care of yourself now, that's like a good investment, right? And the last time I checked, we were not currently being taxed for being out in the sun. Wait, I wish I hadn't said that. Don't tell a politician. There may be a sunshine tax where we have to start wearing electronic sensors on our body to, oh, he's been in the sun for 20 minutes. It'll be an extra dollar. No, I don't know. Here's number two. So basically, when you're out in the sunlight, what you're doing is you're helping your own natural endorphin production work better. So let's just say, for example, you are chronically exhausted, you're tired all the time, you're emotionally frazzled, you don't have any motivation or energy, you don't know what you're going to do with your life. How about you go outside? Maybe you could actually take your shoes off and do some grounding. That's another whole principle. Or if you want to call it earthing, it's all good. But you're training your body to make more endorphins. That's a good thing. That's called free medicine right there. Now, here's the other one right here that I thought was interesting. So just consider this. And who knows, maybe this will be very beneficial for the person that says, I'm so wound up, I can't sleep at night, I never feel good. All right, here's possibility number two that the researchers came up with. They say that the sunlight, or the daylight, is rich in energy. Well, I agree with that. And what that does is the more light or an optimal light exposure to your skin, what that does is it helps your body break down melatonin. Okay? So before you pass judgment on that idea, think about this. So if you break down more melatonin during the day because you're exposed to light, guess what happens? Your brain, or rather your pineal gland, will actually start making extra melatonin in the evening. You ever heard of that one? Okay. Did you know that melatonin has a very strong anti-cancer effect? I think years ago I did a program on Alzheimer's or dementia, and it demonstrated specifically that the higher the melatonin is a natural, you know, God-given substance that your body produces, if you want to call it a hormone or neurotransmitter, that's fine, the less dementia you have, the less Alzheimer's. And so, did you know that melatonin has been shown to greatly reduce the risk of things like ovarian cancer and breast cancer in women? And since this study was done on women, maybe it should be good to at least mention that. So, if you're outside during the daytime, not only does this help your body produce more endorphins, which makes you feel really, really good, kind of makes you think of morphine almost. That's not what I'm saying exactly, but you make more of it when you're out in the sunlight, but you start breaking down the melatonin, which means the brain's going to make more of it. So you mean to tell me that going outside helps your brain produce more melatonin, and that helps you sleep better, and that gets you back into your normal circadian rhythm? Yes. And also it has the benefit of anti-cancer? Exactly. So if somebody asks you what you learned today, you can say, I learned that your risk of cancer goes down greatly and heart disease, and you feel better just by being outside, okay? The researchers do, this is the conclusion here. I'm just trying to read the simple parts of it to you. I'm skipping all the technical numbers and data. The researchers do not assume that more sunlight is synonymous with, you know, the word better. And you understand what I mean. If you expose your body to way too much sunlight, you're going to burn it. You're going to damage your skin. Yes, when you severely burn yourself, you're asking to increase your risk of skin cancer. And that would not be synonymous with becoming healthier. But what I'm suggesting is there's such a thing as an optimal amount of sunlight. So if your children are in the house all day long on the computer, just unplug the computer and tell them to get outside. I mean, that's what my mom and dad told me growing up. And look how it turned out. Okay. If you want to live a longer life means you can be more productive. You can do all the things that God has given you as good works. And you, according to the study, you might be able to do all that good stuff a little bit better if you actually get out in the sunlight. Now, I know people, I can see them driving down the road in their pickup truck, and they've got this big cardboard thing blocking the light. That's not what you want. You need light. Light is life. Isn't that what it says in John chapter 1, that he was the light of men? That's the opposite of darkness. Okay, here's study number 2 right here. This program you're listening to is called Health Essentials. And every week I cover different topics, but I just cover ones that I think are so easy to, implement. Okay, this one, yes, I'm reading this for a personal reason. Those of you that know me would probably say, I get where he's coming from. Here's the title of the article. Do you want to live longer? Well, leave your house every day. You probably think I'm joking about this, but I ask people questions all the time. What do you do all day long? And some people, they're sitting at the computer, they're on Facebook, or they're on the internet, but they're not outside. Okay, the study is done by a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Jacobs and his colleagues, and they used data collected in the Jerusalem Longitudinal Study. What they did was they followed several hundred men and women born around the year 1920. Well, that's why I'm reading this, 1920. I would imagine people left and went outside more in 1920. And what they did was they followed them from 1990, which would have made them, 70 years old, all the way up to 2015, which would have made them 95. I mean, the ones that were still living at the end of the study. Here's the results right here. In all age groups, the chance of survival was greatest when the participants in the study left their home every day. I know this is so simple, it's like the sunlight one. But leaving your home every day, what does that do? So, here's the data right here. Actually, there's no way I can read that to you. It's too technical. So I've got a graph right here. And on the graph, they measure people that are between 70 and 78 years of age. And they're looking at their percentage, what is their chance of survival, meaning how long can you stay alive? They followed them for 8 years, or there was an 8-year gap in here. And I can just tell you right now by looking at it, people that left their house every day, maybe leaving your house could be walking to church. Maybe you could go to a Bible study. Maybe you could go check on a shut-in, see if they need help. Maybe they need you to bring some blueberries to them. Obviously, blueberries from your hand-nourished blueberry bushes that are grown with love. That's the best one of all time right there. Anyway, people that leave the house every day and they get out, guess what? They live longer. And obviously, when we're talking about somebody that's 90 to 95, I know you understand this. I don't really have to explain it a lot, but when you're 90 to 95, your days are most likely you're at the twilight years. You're like at 11:59 p.m. on the clock. You're just about over. Your days are short. Does that make sense? But even those that were 90 to 95, they lived much longer and more successfully if they just left their home every day. I know you can kind of think through this. They say that people over 70 who leave their houses frequently may be healthier than those over 70 who always stay at home. You're probably thinking I'm making this up, but I know of some human organisms that only get out for one reason, and that's to go to a doctor visit, or to have another lab test, or a PET scan, or a CAT scan, or an MRI, or a new ultrasound, or a probing test, or a scoping through this orifice, or through another opening. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. Or they get a call, the doctor wants to try one more laboratory examination or nerve conduction study. You can just keep going and go. That's the only time they get out. And I hate that. This whole business on disease care is just the pits. It doesn't change for the most part. If I were to do an exhaustive study on the number of dollars that are spent on tests, and if that actually leads to improving a person being able to go out and go fishing, I think you're going to be pretty sad at what I come up with, because you're going to say, you mean I spent $300,000 on all this stuff and it didn't lead to any change or any improvement? No. You know what does? Getting out of the house, moving your body, getting some sunlight. But when the researchers brushed away the effect of health with statistical tricks, whatever that means, leaving the house daily still reduced the risk of dying. Those over 70 who leave their homes frequently, They get more exercise than those over 70 who stay at home. I would probably add that if you go outside of your house, you might actually have an opportunity to have a little ray of sunshine to strike maybe the side of your face, and you might feel it, and maybe that's it. Okay, enough of that. Anyway, I'll drop that one right there. No, one more thing. What happens if you take a sweet, adorable mother and you decide that as a child you know best and you're going to stick her in a retirement home, and she has no vehicle to drive with any longer, and she's got a different location where she doesn't have all her support group and friends, and she doesn't have the church she used to go to? Well, you're obviously asking for your mama to die pretty quick. Anyway. Last one, and I'll start taking some phone calls. All right, here we go. This is going to be a shocker, and you probably don't even know what I'm talking about. It's a four-letter word. B-O-O-K. Okay? That says book. Can you understand? It says book readers live a few years longer than those that don't. Okay, the researchers followed a group of 3,635 people over the age of 50 from 2001 until 2012. What they did was they knew all about the study participants' reading behavior, and they looked at whether they could correlate this with a chance of dying. The participants who read books for half an hour or longer every day, they were less likely to die than participants that didn't read at all. Okay, are you with me on that? The risk of death was 20% lower among the book readers than the non-book readers. Folks, if they came out with a drug that you could take every day and they said, look at these studies, there's a 20% reduction in the risk of dying if you take this drug, it would be on every billboard in America. And they could probably charge nearly whatever they wanted for it. But then again, you're in the same boat. You're just passively taking something, hoping it improves your health. Where you ever heard the principle, if you don't use it, you lose it? Okay. The observed reduction of mortality risk corresponds to the extension of life expectancy of almost 2 years. Researchers said in an interview with The Guardian. Okay, that's an online journal, magazine, something like that. I'm looking at the study right here. It just shows that book readers, they have a lot greater survivability. The researchers observed the positive effect of book reading in both men and women and in people with low levels of education and those with high levels of education, which led them to believe, hey, this is not just a coincidence that people that read live longer. The researchers were not able to work out how book reading extends life expectancy. They couldn't figure that out. Maybe they need to read more. I'm sorry. That probably wasn't that funny to you. You know what I thought of, though? Okay, when I read this, I'm thinking the whole time. Okay, what happens when you read? All right? I don't know if you've ever heard this information before, so if this is the first time that you've heard this, well, let me just kind of flesh it out. One of the things that stimulates your body to grow brand new brain cells, and I'll just try to make it sound simple. If your brain is growing new brain cells, guess what happens? That's pretty positive. That means your brain is able to do more as compared to having fewer brain cells. Does that make sense? So if you're operating on two brain cells versus 2 trillion brain cells, guess which one's going to be able to perform more and to do quite a bit more action steps, all right? Well, the reading, or what's called novel learning is kind of the concept is you're trying to study a topic that you may not know much about, but you want to learn. So that's what novel learning is. You are setting your mind like flint that you want to learn about something. And so that takes good old-fashioned elbow grease and work and effort. You don't even know how many times I have to read the same paragraph, or like if I'm reading the Bible, there's lots of things that I've read that I just did not understand. But if I keep reading and reading and reading, it starts to unfold and make sense. Well, sometimes that's the way it is when you start reading about health. It may not make logical sense, but you're trying to apply it to your life and figure it out. Okay, I hear what Dr. Morgan's saying. I'm going to look up articles about being out in the sunlight and see if that improves my health. Well, you're going to find out it does. All right? So when you read, you're going to actually tell your body, I need you to grow some new brain cells for me because I've got greater work. I need you to hold more memory. I need to grow some new memory space on your hard drive. Well, but what I thought of is just real simple. The thing of it is, God understands how all this works. I don't. I know this, though. If you read, that activates your imagination. And when you have an active imagination, that can actually lead to things like motivation and ambition and drive. And you can read something and you go, oh my goodness, I can do that. I can imitate that person. Or I can start rising to the occasion. Or I can learn to do this. You don't know how many times I've been to YouTube before and I've looked up a video on how do I change out this bulb on this car or vehicle, or how do I change an oxygen sensor. It's amazing what you can learn. Yes, I know there's plenty of garbage on websites, but if you set your mind you're going to look for the good stuff, well, then you can start weeding through all that stuff and separating the wheat from the chaff. The bottom line is, when you read, you live longer by 2 years. Okay, I've got several other studies here, but I know that I'm several people are trying to call in. If you would like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open. And the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Morning, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Last October, my wife was doing some stretches, and she hurt her hamstring, and then that went down to her calf and then to her foot.
That's called the posterior chain, by the way.
Okay. And last November, I had to go in and get a full knee replacement.
Now, are you talking about her or you?
Well, her, but this has to do with her because she came in to see me after I got out of surgery.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, and she left the room, but her left foot was flapping on the ground.
Wait. What do you mean is flapping? Dropping or dragging?
Dropping.
Okay, yeah, well, that's called foot drop, and that means there's some damage or pressure on a nerve that controls the muscles that keep the foot from dropping or dragging or flapping. I just learned a new term.
So what happened is that when she was walking, her foot didn't pick up, and she went down and broke her kneecap in seven places.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
So she's kind of pretty much healed from that, but we're still dealing with the drop foot issue. We've been to three different doctors. She's had two MRIs, three MRIs, one for her lower back, one for her knee, and one for pelvic.
Yeah, they tried to see if maybe there was a claudication or an obstruction, something that's pinching the nerve or a disc bulge. Did they find that?
No.
Okay, that's good. That's a good sign, though. That's great.
Also, one of the doctors, a nerve doctor. The last doctor we went to was a foot doctor, and nobody seems to know what to do about it.
Well, what she has is she has an entrapment. Do you know what the word entrapment means?
No.
Okay, so if you had a mouse that was in your house, what would you put on the ground to trap him?
Yeah, trap.
Yeah, exactly, a trap. And so if the trap was activated by him, you know, tugging on the cheese that was on the trigger or the whatever you want to call it, it would catch him and he would be entrapped. And so what we have is there is a nerve to what are called your dorsiflexors of your lower leg. It's being trapped or pinched, and I'm trying to just talk you through this. This shouldn't be that hard to figure out.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The nerve doctor said he was kind of puzzled.
He's the best of the best, and he's puzzled, so.
Yeah, and the foot doctor, his final suggestion was one of two things. One, they could do surgery and take a tendon and put it on the other side of the foot to help make it work, and we did not for that.
Okay, back up just for a second. What did he say the problem was that he was going to try to fix? I heard the solution was surgery, but what exactly is he trying to repair?
We're not sure.
Well, I'm not either. So
her being able to have her footwork.
Okay.
But what we ended up opting for was a brace. And I know it's not a cure, but it's just an apparatus to help her when she walks it.
Hey, have you ever heard of carpal tunnel syndrome?
Yes.
All right. When I was maybe 2 years old, I ran through a glass door. I can see a flash in my brain right now. We were in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. My dad pulls up in the driveway, and I don't remember anything after that, though. I have no knowledge. I just remember the glass door running through it. That's it.
Uh-huh.
So I can't give any more details, but if you saw my left wrist right now, you would see that it's got just a lot of scar tissue in it. I don't ever show it to somebody. It's not a big deal. But I know what it's like to have my hand completely die and go numb on me. But the problem was, I had inflammation, swelling, and dysfunction of the wrist that was causing swelling where those nerves would travel to my hand, and that was making them go dead. Now, I'm not even going to tell you what my solution was, but in the case of your wife, there's got to be a nerve that's entrapped somewhere, and maybe it's entrapped not by a bulging disc or a ruptured disc or a bone spur in what's called the intervertebral foramen, or the, it just may not be any of those things. Maybe there's a point where there's a muscle that has failed to work properly, and so I'm going to give you a different line of thinking, because what you've tried really hadn't worked, right?
Right.
So I'm going to suggest to you that if she was here at the radio station right now and I attempted to examine her, I would find out that she's got some tremendous muscle dysfunction somewhere in the body. And so in this neck of the woods, we've got to look at, can I just go down the muscles with you?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a muscle called the piriformis. And the piriformis muscle is I'm going to call it a hip rotator. Is it okay? Simpler?
Sure.
Make it sound simple. But the sciatic nerve passes through that muscle. Now, if you look at human anatomy books like Gray's Anatomy, they're going to show you a presentation of like maybe 30 possible presentations of how the nerve could split this way, go that way. But the point that I'm trying to make is there's got to be some place where that nerve is being pinched and choked off, and we just need to identify where that is. Number two, there's probably a muscle group, a major muscle group, that's supposed to hold everything in alignment along that posterior chain, and it ain't working right. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, this is like what my dad would say. So he would say, hey, Roy, be careful. That person's not running on all eight cylinders. You know what that means?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's going on with your wife right now. Not her, but there's got to be a muscle that's not firing properly. And when a muscle doesn't fire properly, things to begin to become saggy and compressed, and it can pinch off the life force of the nerve. Okay.
Well, we kind of thought it was muscular because it all began when she was stretching.
Well, even if I'm wrong about everything, I'm not wrong about this. I am not wrong about this. I mean, I'm not retarded. I've done this for too long. We've got it. Well, some people think I'm retarded, and I do have an extremely low IQ. That's already been proven. But anyway, to make a long story short, part of the component of what your wife is dealing with is she's probably got some very severe dysfunction, and it's so simple, they haven't even checked for it. What they're doing is they're checking for a pathology that leads to a surgical procedure. That's a whole different mindset. I don't know if you know what I mean by that. If
yeah,
all you do is you have blinders on, you're looking at, yes, Mrs. Johnson, so you can't pick up your foot. Well, let me think in terms of how I'm going to do a surgery on you. Well, what if that's not the right question to ask? What if the right question is, let me do a good old-fashioned examination and find out where the problem is. So what if she's got some major dysfunction of the piriformis or the pelvic floor? I mean, she is a woman. Pelvic floor. Has she had children before?
Yes.
Has she had a C-section?
No.
Has she had an episiotomy?
Yes.
Okay, bingo. We're getting there. What we're going to find is that she's got some major dysfunction of the pelvic floor muscles, probably the hip rotators. That'd be my starting point right there. And so we can go all the way down the leg, but you've got to find out where the leg has been impinged. And it may be, and just forgive me for kind of being blunt, because this may not sound logical, maybe she tore a hamstring and it's all balled up right around that nerve, and that nerve is getting the crap beat out of it every single day. And she can't get enough nerve flow because it's being pinched. The life force is being pinched out of it. We got to figure that out. You know what the solution is? It's called restoring function, improving the strength and the balance and the flexibility. So you've got to run toward the problem. That's my recommendation to you today. Let's run toward the problem and not run away from it and say, let's just watch and wait and do this. Do you know how many times in 35 years I've heard the phrase, my doctor said this is like really, this is going to be like 100% cure if I do this surgery. Well, was it? No, I wish I'd never had it. So,
well, to go along with that statement there, while her foot doctor was telling her about surgery, I told him that my surgery on my knee, my doctor gave me odds of it. You know, would it work or would it not work? He gave me an odds.
Yeah.
So I asked him, well, what are the odds of this surgery being successful? And he got kind of defensive.
Well, you know why? Because they gave you nothing definitive to begin with. They kept saying, I don't know. I'm puzzled. I'm perplexed.
Yeah, he said, well, if it wasn't going to be successful, I wouldn't have brought it up.
Well, okay. Well, he can say that only once.
Yeah.
But once you start cutting on things, you can't just undo that. That's like you could tell a person, I need to remove all the teeth, but well, you can't get them back afterwards.
Yeah, we're trying to avoid surgery.
Well, that's why I'm just trying to gently tell you, maybe we should do a different type of evaluation on your wife and try to find out where the problem's coming from.
Okay.
You just have to be open. I mean, you understand this is radio, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like calling a mechanic and saying, my car's doing a rah, 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 rah. Well, bring it in. let me look at the car and find out what the problem is. And so that would be my top thing that I would think about right now. And you know what the solution is? What if she has major muscle dysfunction to the point where certain muscle groups aren't even remotely working right? Well, what do you think I'm going to tell you? This is the way that we're going to attack that. We're going to try to restore function. I'm going to have you do this piriformis exercise and that particular stretch, and then you're going to work on your balance right here, and you're going to do this and this and this. But what you're doing is you're trying to regain lost function. That's the only way through this. If somebody has a heart with an ejection fraction of 12%, what's the way through that? Healing the heart, where it can work better. If somebody has rotten kidneys and they're about ready for dialysis, well, what's the way through this? Do something different that might actually help create the environment for your kidneys to heal and repair, if it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look first and foremost, I would look for major muscle groups that could potentially entrap or bind or pinch the nerve and see where those are and then try to fix it. It's just called good old-fashioned hard work and effort.
Right.
That's probably not really a word you hear a whole lot. It's called hard work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. So, I guess we need to make an appointment with you.
Well, or somebody. You know, you can call anybody you want on the phone and say, hey, what do you think about this right here? Well, the thing of it is, I'm not trying to poo-poo the idea of getting a surgery, because there's lots of cases where a person needs a surgery. And can I give you an example from last week?
Uh-huh.
A young man, probably in his middle 50s, said, my back is killing me. It's horrible. His friend at church suggested that he have low back injections. Now, you got to understand, the friend at church is not a physician. Now, just because the man at church has already had, you know, let's just say, a whole bunch of surgeries and a whole bunch of injections, does that make him qualified? No. But he's trying to be helpful to him, isn't he?
Yeah.
So my recommendations were different. I said, why don't you just try this technique for a few days? And so he went from sheer misery to actually feeling very, very good in about 2.5 days. So what's wrong with that? What's wrong with him healing and getting now, this guy had a really, really swollen disc. I mean, it was real swollen. There's no way I would tell this guy, you know, today's Saturday, it's a beautiful day outside, maybe you should go out and weed eat the all 25 acres. I would never do that. You don't take a person once they're healing and, you know, put them in a situation where they could make it worse. But we used a nutritional supplement to try to get rid of the swelling of the disc, and he continued with, I think, heat and some other therapies, and he's fine. Now, we avoided the low back injections in the surgery, didn't we?
Yes.
So that's good. So either way, we got to figure out what the problem is.
Okay.
I'm not trying to tell you I know. I haven't examined her, but I have some ideas.
Okay.
I'm sure you have some ideas also.
Well, we'll get with you sometime this week then.
Well, thank you very much. I am really looking forward to it. I like challenging cases.
Well, this is a challenge.
I'm probably weird that way, because you know what? Sometimes when I have a person come in, I go, oh boy, what have I gotten myself into? Okay, well, we have no choice. We got to get this fixed.
She's using a foot brace right now where it kind of springs her foot back up. So
no, and I do understand that, and that's very, very significant.
Yeah.
This has been going on for like a couple of years now. Is that what you said?
No, since last October.
Oh, that's right. You said last October. So not even a year.
Yeah, hopefully nothing's permanently damaged.
Well, let me say this right here. God has designed the body to adapt and to heal and repair, but you have to do your part.
Yeah.
And so let's try to find out what a good course of action is, or action steps to try to get her back. I mean, at the very least, I know what I'd have her do. Put her on a bicycle. She'd be pedaling all day long to fix that.
Well, she does have one of those foot pedals.
She doesn't really need a car anymore. Just give her a bicycle. She can go to Walmart that way.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
all right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your phone call.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
You too.
Okay, there's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257 if you'd like to join me on the radio. 903-586-5257. And we'll go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I don't know none of them sirs, but we'll go ahead.
Does that mean you identify as the opposite of sir?
No, just good old boy.
Okay.
Anyway.
Are you kidding? My mother and father would not allow me to do this otherwise. I couldn't do anything other than say yes, sir, no, sir.
And no, ma'am, and yes.
That's right, ma'am. And I think that's the way it should be.
I think you're right, too. That's one of the things we've lost. Anyway, they have just diagnosed me with spondylosis.
Is that in your lower back?
Yeah.
Okay.
My daughter was diagnosed with it about 12 years ago. In my understanding that's more or less rare, because generally it doesn't affect the females.
Well, she's probably had some type of mechanical injury to her lower back that led to it.
Okay. Anyway, I'm supposed to, I guess I'm about 2 weeks from an MRI as they're looking farther into it.
What are you actually feeling or experiencing?
It goes down into my left hip joint. It depends sometimes anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes on my feet, and it hurts bad. Can hardly walk. And other times it's 20 or 30 minutes I don't have any.
Does your leg go numb? Or just pain?
Once in a while, but not too often. Just
as a general rule, the more that a person is upright and standing and walking, if that increases pain, that's usually called claudication. What that means is there's narrowing somewhere, like in the lower back, and the nerves or the arteries are getting pinched. Have you ever seen these teeter inversion traction machines where you kind of get into it and turn yourself upside down?
Yeah, I've seen them advertised.
That's one possible remedy, because what that does is it kind of pulls all that inflammation apart from the disc. Or if you want to call it traction, home traction, that's another way.
Yeah, well, I guess in 2002, 2003, I did a spinal decompression.
Did that work?
I was the best I'd felt for many years.
Well, would you say for the most part you're pretty good at taking care of yourself?
Fairly.
I mean, and let me just talk about this for a second. If you've got pain in your lower back, even if they do a surgical procedure to correct that, and I got to be open-minded about this, because if you stand up and you have pain going down your leg, you may have an opening where it should be wide open the size of a nickel, but it's down to the size of a small ball bearing, and the nerve has to travel through that small space. There are some people that do need surgery for this if they're going to have a highly functional life, so I don't know how, but you haven't had the MRI yet. That should help with that.
Because going into the knife is about the last choice.
Right. And so let me just kind of give you a rundown, you know, as I think about this. There is a substance that comes from seafood shells called glucosamine sulfate, chondroitin sulfate, and there's another one called MSM. That is one way that you can try to nourish those joints and the cartilage. Now, personally, if I were in your shoes, I'll tell you what I would do. There's a plant, it's known as a cactus, but it's called aloe vera.
Yeah.
I can't find any research on how it rejuvenates the disc in the lower back, but I think it does. I've just seen it work over and over again. So it could be as simple as you drink a small amount of aloe vera juice every day just to nourish the disc.
Okay.
But if you've got all this stuff going on in your lower back, then what you got to do is you just got to look in the mirror and say, okay, what can I do to help myself get better? And so there's a technique called a dead hang where you just grab onto a chin-up bar and hang as long as you can. You're trying to decompress the back. They have those teeter inversion home traction units where you can do the same thing. As long as you don't have like bad sinus problems or bad heart problems or glaucoma, you could probably do it just fine. If it were me, the exercises that I've always followed is Core Performance by Mark Verstegen, and that's a book written in 1996. It's not new. But those are the rehabilitating exercises to fix a back problem. You could probably buy a used copy for $2.50. Shipping may cost you $4, but the book could be used for $2.50. But it's called Core Performance, and at the very least, that's what you've got to think of. If you've got a back problem, your body is screaming that it's in need of some rehabilitation and restoration. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely.
If you're not hydrated, then you really want to make sure that you're hydrated. I've always found that alcohol consumption makes all these things worse. I know that's not rocket science. You've already heard of all that stuff.
Right. There's no problem there.
Good. Well, I just thought I'd mention in case somebody else it could be relevant. So the least amount of sugar that you eat, the faster you're going to heal from this when it comes to lower back pain. I've seen that over and over and over again. I've seen people with such severe pain, if they just cut out sugar, they mysteriously, 5 days later, feel the best they've ever felt. So.
Okay.
If you spent time stretching every single day, you could go onto YouTube if you wanted to, and you could type in, there's a channel called Movement by David. I like the kid. I think he's really gifted. And the other thing that I like, he doesn't fiddle around wasting your time with story after story about how great of a person he is. Some YouTube videos, you'd think, this is the only human being on earth that's ever figured anything out. But but he's got some hip and some back stretches. You can just instantly watch him and follow along, but if you do these every single day, you'll start kind of attacking or running toward this problem that you've got in your lower back. Anything that improves your suppleness and your flexibility is going to improve your blood flow and your circulation. It's going to help tell your muscles to stop complaining so much. So any amount of exercising that you can do to rehabilitate your body is a good thing.
All right. That was, again, what was the name of that channel?
His channel is called Movement by David. To me, he looks like he's probably 14, 15 tops. I'm just joking. He's probably more like 21, 22, but he's really, really good.
Okay.
And he's just right and straight and to the point, so it's not like you got to watch the entire video for 45 minutes to get to the last 10 seconds where he actually shows it to you. I don't like those videos.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the term that motion is lotion?
No, but...
Well, you have now.
Yeah, it does make sense.
And so by doing stretches and exercises, you're actually going to help correct and help your low back to heal, but you're going to start lubing it up or lubricating it. That's where glucosamine sulfate really comes in handy. There was one study that I came across a few years ago, and it showed men that had horrible, rotten disc they were able to tremendously help him to heal just by the use of glucosamine sulfate. Now, it took 20 to 24 months to do it because the disc does not heal super fast.
Uh-huh.
But if it were me, if you have a lot of inflammation in your lower back, man, I would probably try to talk you into eating about 20 to 25 frozen cherries a day. Cherries contain a compound called an anthocyanidine, and it's really good at helping rid the body of inflammation, just like maybe you've heard that ginger is really good, or turmeric is really good, or cod liver oil. All those things can really be very, very good for an inflamed lower back.
All right.
And then you can get your wife to give you a low back massage. She can just have you lay on the ground, and she could take her shoes off like a Japanese woman would and just walk up and down your back. What could go wrong?
Lots.
I mean, isn't that a great recommendation, sir?
Yes.
No, I'll let you use your good judgment. You know, I'm sort of teasing about that. But these are the things that you would look at doing. So regardless of what the test results show, I would still run toward what are the best options that I have within my own arsenal to help myself get better. Now, can you go for a short walk before it gets you, or does it take just about 5 minutes of walk until it gets worse?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Well, that tells me, though, that your body is trying to run toward the problem and heal it. That's a good sign. So, I mean, if I was there at the house with you, we'd go over like several simple stretches and try to get up and walk and see if you could walk a little bit further and better.
All right.
If it were me, when it came to eating, I would probably focus more on things like, do you like to eat fish?
Yeah.
Do you have any problem with either flounder or salmon or halibut or sardines or anything like that? Cod?
The price on halibut, but other than that, no.
You make a really good point. It's only $1 million an ounce.
Yeah, it seems like.
Well, I know this. It's more expensive now than what it was 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I think the cost of everything has gone up. When you eat fish, if I could just talk you into eating meat and vegetables and fruit, I think that you would be in a much better situation to helping assist your body in healing as compared to eating lots of refined sugar, processed foods, and grains and processed foods. So if you just stuck with blueberries and strawberries and fruit salad for dessert and you had meat and vegetables, I mean, I could look up the studies. I can almost just guarantee you the number one most toxic food of all time is called the potato chip.
Yeah, about the most worthless to boot.
Yep, yeah, I'm going to agree with you. So if you set your mind that you're going to focus on eating meat and vegetables and fruit, you're going to be head and shoulders above everybody else that's eating junk food all day long.
Okay.
So that should help you right there.
Alrighty.
If it were me and I had really bad back pain, I think I'd rub some lemon juice on it. On the skin, let the lemon juice soak in.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we're all out of time today. I'm looking at my clock. But thank you very much for your phone call. I really am rooting for you. I want you to do really well.
I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.